Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Aha, bow, bow, bow.
Shout out to Aaliyah Boston. Welcome in, friend. Hope you are having a good one. But as we record on a Thursday, early Thursday afternoon, we are, what, like 32, 33 hours away from more playoff basketball. We want to talk about what happened in these game twos, dig into what we saw, what we may see in the game threes as the series shifts to the other side. But first, a little bit of bookkeeping on the news front. On the NBA side, the Knicks, Wolves, Hornets three-team trade is officially done. We're not going to rehash all of our thoughts. Listen to the last episode to get our breakdown of the actual trade. But we do have the official details. It's done. Once again, Karl-Anthony Towns going to the Knicks. We knew that already. But they're also getting the rights to big man James Naji of the Charlotte Hornets. The Wolves getting Julius Randle, Dante DiVincenzo, Kata Bates-Jop, and a 2025 first-round pick via Detroit. That pick is top 13 protected in 2025. Top 11 protected in 26. It is top 9 protected in 2027. And if it doesn't convey, it turns into a 2027 second round pick. And the Charlotte Hornets, all we knew at the time of our previous recording was that they had Daquan Jeffries coming in the door. They will also be receiving Charlie Brown Jr., Dwayne Washington Jr., $7.2 million in cash, and 3 second round picks. It is a 2025 second rounder, the least favorable of Denver and Philadelphia's pick, a 2026 second rounder from Golden State, and a 2031 second round pick. Still trying to nail down the details of that particular pick for the super draft folks that want to care about that portion of the program. But those are your official trade details. Again, we broke down particularly the Cat and Julius Randle, all that portion of the trade on the last episode of the pod. So check that out if you haven't already. And on the WNBA side, the Atlanta Dream parting ways with head coach Tanisha Wright after 3 seasons, a 48-68 record. In those 3 seasons with Tanisha Wright, featuring 2 straight playoff berths in 2023 and this past season. She went 0-4 across those games. Tanisha Wright was the AP Coach of the Year in 2022, her first season, as the Dream went 14-22 and almost made the playoffs in that first season. And throughout her tenure, the Dream were 11th, 9th, and last this past season in offensive rating. And they were 5th, 6th, and 6th again in defensive rating. Steve, I have a lot of Tanisha Wright thoughts. Well, because I have a lot of Tanisha Wright thoughts, I'll ask you first. Were you surprised that this move was made, or just what were some of your initial takeaways?
Well, because you have a bunch of Tanisha Wright thoughts, why don't you go first?
Well, fair enough. We will pass the rock back and forth. But I kind of felt bad for Tanisha Wright. Because I do feel like with the offense in particular and some of the woes that we've seen with Atlanta's offense throughout her tenure, some of this was just a personnel deal. Some of this was just an overall lack of rim pressure shooting, and in particular movement shooting outside of Ryan Howard. And so I do think when you're facing top level defenses in particular, if you are lacking in rim pressure or you're lacking in shooting, it becomes a lot easier to switch or duck under, or just in general, just kind of flatten out what you're trying to do on offense. And when you're also dealing with a young or youngish core that you're trying to establish principles with, you're trying to establish a level of ball movement and body movement. If you take those options away, it isn't always easy to flow like second side or get into your secondary or tertiary actions and things like that. And so I do think she had 3 years. So I don't want to, it's not necessarily like the Teresa Weatherspoon situation where you got one and then the move was made. But I do feel like a lot of this was personnel based. On the other side of the coin, like we've talked about this a little bit on the pod, but mostly offline, to where the end of last season and the second half of last season, the post All-Star break stretch, was really odd. But I think the loudest portion of that was the Dream enter the All-Star break on a win streak. They come out of the All-Star break. Cheyenne Parker, Tyus, no longer in the starting lineup. And we're just kind of like, wait, what happened? Was there some kind of disciplinary thing? Or was this just roster move, whatever? And we didn't get a lot, at least publicly, on like the reasoning behind that. And from there, it's like, this feels odd. The vibe feels kind of odd right now. And then again, you go back through the second half of last season, and there were so many fourth quarters for the Atlanta Dream to where not only were they getting flattened out, it felt like a lack of trust and knowledge in what they were trying to accomplish offensively and some general tempo issues. And again, like some of that is just personnel based. It's easier to switch or it's easier to duck under when you don't have pull-up shooters, et cetera, et cetera. But the way that it looked and the way that it felt, and then you either attend some of those post-game presses or like the Dream will post their post-game stuff on their YouTube channel, stuff like that. You listen to the message, you listen to how it's being delivered and things like that. It's like, oh, this doesn't feel great. And I remember asking you, and we talked about it in our watch parties a couple of times, like, hey, how secure do we think this situation in Atlanta is? And it was difficult to go that route because Tanisha Wright, again, really good year one, and got an extension right after that. And so on one hand, like, I don't think they're going to make any kind of move considering they just extended her and the GM through 2027. But it's not, like, I was like, this doesn't feel, something feels off about this. And I had the thought, like, I wonder how some of the messages were being received. Not necessarily that they were wrong, but like, how is this being taken over? Like, how are the players taking this? And like, what is the application? Because it felt like a lot of mention of effort and attention to detail and naturally execution with some of the fourth quarter lapses that we saw. And it's just like, the fact that she's had to say this so often seems a bit troubling to me. And then we get to this past season, and I personally just kind of consider it a wash because it's hard to establish your offense when Ryan Howard misses as much time as she has. Jordan Canada, who would absolutely help the rim pressure issue in particular, she misses half the season. Cheyenne Parker-Tyus, I believe, missed 15 games and ultimately didn't finish out this regular season and postseason. And so I thought maybe heading into next season, okay, this would kind of be the quote-unquote hot seat year for her, but the Dream going a different direction. And so I'm just kind of in a weird place with this one as I've had some time to sit with it. Because I think Tanisha Wright very much wanted to establish a defensive identity with this team. And considering some of the personnel that they've had on that end, particularly in the front court, and the mixing and matching that she's had to do, the fact that they were pretty well, they've never had a below average defense under her tenure, like that shines a positive light. And I remember talking about, you know, year one in particular with Atlanta. I remember threading, I want to say it was the first game of the season, but it was within the first two or three games of the year. It was a Dream Sparks game that I ended up doing a thread on. I was like, this is some really fun off-ball stuff that Tanisha Wright is running for Ryan Howard and in general what they're trying to establish. So like, I feel like with better personnel, like I think things could have looked better offensively. Things could have looked smoother. But I also understand going a different direction if you don't feel like the application is going to be as smooth or if you have any questions about how the message, how the voice is being received. And I think if you're entering an offseason where like we have an expansion, going to have some play, there's just going to be a lot of roster movement this offseason. And over the next couple, like I can get how Atlanta gets to, let's get a new voice in the room now. And let's just grow with whatever this new vision is going to look like.
Well, to try and unpack it, I was not really surprised. In the sense that I think you look at this team and they rallied to make the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. They won three of their last five games to end consecutive seasons. It's just always had a weird stretch. And I don't think this year was necessarily the coach's fault. A lot of injuries. I mean, injury riddle campaign. They just didn't have their people. I think in totality, it all just kind of blends together. I go back to that first year of Tanisha Wright. The Dream were in a different space, and that team got up and down the court, driving kick, moving the ball, playing with tempo. One of those scenarios where very good, but the league kind of caught up to them. They had to try and figure out how to win, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, in that 2022 year, they started 7-4. They end 14-22. Mm-hmm. You go to 2023, you add Alicia Gray. Okay, we're building something here, but we still have to learn how to win. And what's it going to be? Is our tempo the same? Is it a little more off? Do we have more firepower and star power? Do we play through the posts? Is our defense going to be hold steady and be consistent? and then you go 12-8 to 16-19, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got it was a you know, we joked about it, a prove it series between Dallas and Atlanta. And you didn't win a game. This year happens, but also you add Tina Charles, you add Jordan Cantona. Okay, maybe we need more of this in the half court. Maybe we need more of that. And then you kind of end up with the same, I don't want to say flat feeling,
mm-hmm.
but the result. So this year was likely the, hey, we need to see how good this is in a year where you probably wouldn't be able to have that answer because of injuries. And I think the totality is going to get you. In my brain, I'm trying to think. You also have to realize the league shifted very quickly during these 3 years.
That's also true.
If you go back to 2022, right? The Dream were 14-22. The Lynx were 14-22. The Mercury were 15-21. And the Liberty were 16-20. And then, you know, we had the Aces, the Sky, the Sun, the Storm up top. And then everything changed.
Yeah, I hear that the Liberty added a couple of pieces.
The Liberty became the Liberty that we kind of know now. The Aces were just very dominant. Connecticut refused to go away. All right, there's room for us, though. You know, we can catch up to Washington. Chicago was good. We can, you know, we're here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the league changed again. Because the Aces won. The Liberty said, you know what? We need more. The Sun said, you know what? We need more.
The Seattle Storm, who were at the bottom of the standings in 2023, may have added a couple of pieces.
Yeah, yeah. They went from that to, yep, we are now entering the super team era. Phoenix Mercury were like, well, we need people, too. Indiana might have had a good draft.
Mm-hmm.
Landscape changed. And so you have this weird mashup of a team that's building the right way. I mean, I think they escalated the right way. I think you'd probably point to certain things with the roster that you might want or what not want. But, okay, we added a piece. We need this. We added a piece. We need this. We added a piece. You're ready for takeoff, but you're ready for a takeoff in a league that's way different. Mm-hmm. Like that Seattle Storm team that they put together with all that talent, 5 seed.
Yeah, 5 seed, didn't win a playoff game.
Like and that's where you were the year before. The team featuring NECA, Skylar Diggins-Smith, Jewel Lloyd, Ezzie Maribegor is where you were.
Yeah. When you put it that way, that's nuts.
It gets tricky. It gets tricky. I mean, it's the same thing for Dallas. They were the 4 seed. You know who the 4 seed was this year? The Las Vegas Aces. It's tough. And so I appreciate the work she did to try and navigate. And again, it's not easy to get the team to rally after some of these seasons. Yeah. They had a flat stretch, but they rebounded, especially the last 2 years, to make a push, make a run. So there was a belief. There just was a lack of consistency. I think you could see the vision, even in that playoff series, you could see what they could be. The problem is they just couldn't sustain it. You know, the defense wasn't at enough of a level to work through some of the offensive things. The offense wasn't at enough of a level consistently to work through some of the defensive moments. So you just had a mashup of flashes. Oh no, it's gone south. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, when you've made the steps to improve the roster, and this is just purely from a other perspective. Okay. We kind of need some results. I don't know if we can afford to do that again, because even in this season, you look at the non-playoff team, someone is going to get a very talented player.
Yeah.
And like the Wings, I don't think the Dallas Wings will be 9-31 next year. It's a real competitive league. It's tough.
Hmm. Yeah, just to your point about the the bottom of the standings. Like, again, there's a very fun draft coming in. But on top of that, you know, like, as the Dream dealt with a bunch of injuries, you know who else dealt with some key injuries this year? The Phoenix Mercury, who were ahead of them. The Washington Mystics. The Dallas Wings. The Los Angeles Sparks. And we are entering, you know, this offseason in particular, again, we have the expansion draft, so that's going to make rosters look different. But it's also going to be the last year until, you know, TV money kicks in, likely new CBA, all those things. So we're really entering like 1 year contract territory with this free agency period in particular. It could get really funny where some of the top names actually go this year. And where does that leave Atlanta? And I think for them, to your point about not having the consistency and stuff like that, I would imagine Atlanta brass looked at that. Like, we are certainly in a better place than we were before Tanisha Wright got hired. Because the season before that was, we got more stuff to talk about this year. But there was a lot happening.
Waves arms wildly.
Yeah. Let's just say they were not in a great place in terms of reputation and some of the things that were happening. And so for Tanisha to come in and be not just a breath of fresh air, but that certainly helps, but also, we're establishing something. We're building something. There's a layer of, I was going back to like the opening press release or like the press release that came out when she was hired. Where they mentioned like, hey, there's a level of accountability and toughness that they want, that she brings to the table and stuff. Like, they needed all of that. But like, to your point, like, have they built out enough to where you can now get into the free agency period this year and say, hey, insert star name here, come here for a year, we can make this leap, we can build something here. Like, I don't know if their pitch is going to be better than some of the other teams that are going to be tossing out stuff. And that's before getting into the Aces can generate cap, the Liberty can generate cap, I think the Storm technically can generate cap. Like, the teams ahead of them can get in this kind of one-year prove-it deal race. And so if you feel like you're going to be stuck in the same place, like, it's tough because I don't feel like a lot of this is her fault, honestly. Like, I do not believe she's a perfect coach. But, like, I think a lot of this is out of her hands and is more of, you know, what she's been given personnel-wise. And to your point, Steven, I really appreciate it. Just where the league is and how quickly it shifted. It just felt like she just ended up behind the eight ball in that regard. And so I do hope she's able to land somewhere else, if that's something that she wants to do. Like, reading through, she made like a thread on Twitter thanking everyone and stuff like that. So I do wonder if this is going to be like toss my hat in the ring for some of these other head coach openings. If it's going to be, I'll be an assistant under insert team here for a year, or if this is going to be a year away and then we come back. I don't know which direction she's going to go in there. She obviously can do whatever she wants, and I hope she does whatever is most fulfilling to her. But yeah, it's just kind of tough. Like, coaching in the W is tough. The league is super competitive. Like, it feels like a basic point, but within this lens, like, you can see it. To where you can make the playoffs twice in a row and it's just not enough. It's just a tough bit. And so from there, like, I tossed the question out on Twitter and I tossed it to you, Steve. Like, if you're the Dream, do you look for established voice that can get us to, you know, I guess, point B to point C? Or do you want to go with a younger voice that can kind of grow with this core?
I think you go with whatever aligns with the front office vision to a degree. Mm. I think you need the symmetry there and whatever you're looking for as far as we want to be this offensively or we want to be this defensively or who's going to map out the vision over the next 2-3 years that's going to help us take what we believe is the next step. I think that's where you go. It could be either of those, in my opinion. There's a lot of great young assistants who could do a tremendous job. It's just a matter of which way they want to try and get it done. Mm-hmm. Because there's no guarantee you copy and paste a great coach into this scenario. Are you ready for that? Is your roster ready for that in this league?
Yeah.
Are you 100% confident that this is specifically the team that will take it over the top? Or do you need an overhaul of who we are?
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you went there because that was going to be my secondary question. Like, bouncing off of what you said about how the league has shifted, like, is Atlanta even ready to make that leap into, you know, the top three, top four conversation? And again, like, some of that isn't their fault. Like, there's only so much you can do when the Aces have four Olympians and the Liberty have multiple Olympians. And again, the Storm just did what they did. And I would imagine they want to bring NECA back and stuff like that. So, like, there is just a dearth of all W-level talent that is there that you can't get your hands on. Or at least projected not be able to get your hands on. You never know what can happen with trades and stuff. But it's just like, ooh, like, what if you are, at least for a year, kind of boxed into the 5 through 7 group? Like, does that influence how you want to go about the coaching thing? Because a conversation that we've had, just looking at what Atlanta has right now, I think a lot is on the shoulders of Ryan Howard and her development in terms of how successful this build is going to be. Because in an ideal world, she makes the leap from young all-star to like legitimate star or legitimate superstar. And that just changes the math of what this floor and ceiling can be. And that also influences what type of player or what level of player you need to really make the next leap if Ryan's making it internally, if that makes sense. And so, like, I think there is going to be more of a spotlight on Ryan. Not necessarily in a negative sense, but, like, I think you kind of go there because I think that's probably the most important part of your evaluation of, like, the actual roster. Do you believe Ryan plus Alicia can battle with Asia plus Kelsey or Asia plus Jackie or Asia plus Chelsea, whichever one you want to do as a duo? Do you believe that these two can eventually grow to be able to battle with Stewie plus Sabrina, Sabrina plus Jonquel, Stewie plus Jonquel? Are these two ready to duel with, again, they just lost to the Aces, but NECA plus Jewel? Like, are those two there? And if not, do you trust that Ryan can grow to a level to where that becomes more of a conversation? And if not, how are we acquiring that piece? What is the timeline in acquiring that piece? Is this, let's make a trade and swing for someone that's available? Or should we focus in on the next couple of drafts and see if we can land that person? Not necessarily like trade Alicia, trade Ryan, anything like that. But is it going to be a slower build? Because that would also influence, in my opinion, like what type of coach you're looking for. If you feel like you are further away than you may have anticipated heading into this season.
Here's the thing. It's very hard to take a we're far away approach in this league unless you just know this ain't our year. Mm-hmm. Mystics knew this ain't really our year. They still competed. Sparks knew this wasn't really our year. They still competed. Sky probably had that in their mind. They were right there. Mm-hmm. You do kind of need to build a collective to a degree. This is not a league that you want to stay at the bottom of for very long, especially as investments are coming in and facilities are coming in and more places are more attractive and more teams are coming in. You kind of need to establish your thing. So I think for me, I don't know if it's just on Ryan Howard and Alicia Gray. I think it's on, okay, what is our collective right now? What is our identity? How good is our good? I don't think they have the answers to that. And so is it as simple as, okay, addition by subtraction, and now we try and fill the gaps, and now we feel really comfortable with the top 8 that we have, and we can fill the gaps around that? Is it just finding the best 5 and moving forward from there? I think that is probably the toughest part. If you're Atlanta, you don't know how good the group is, so you don't necessarily know where your pivot is.
Ooh, that is a... It's a tough spot to be in. It's a really tough spot to be in. I am fascinated about what this offseason will look like overall. And naturally, we're having a dream discussion, but like what that's going to look like for them. Because I think the types of names that they're linked to, both in the coaching search and again, zooming forward to like free agency, like I think that's going to tell a good bit about like where they're at, what they're trying to build, and how close they feel like they are. So I'm excited to see what it's going to look like. And buddy, that is, what is that, 3 openings now? Have to be filled by the beginning of the season. It's an interesting time in the W.
Oh, are you asking me to do math?
You know what? Hey, my fault, big dog. But no, it's gonna be fascinating. Excited to see what that's gonna look like. But okay, we move past the Atlanta Dream portion. Let's talk some playoff hoops. We had a couple of game 2s. We'll start with the Liberty and the Aces. The New York Liberty with a thrilling 88-84 victory over the Las Vegas Aces. They now lead the series 2-0 as the series shifts to Vegas. Recording on Thursday afternoon, I am flying to Vegas tonight, so I'll be in attendance for Game 3 and hopefully Game 4. We'll see if the series extends. But 4-point win, really close game. And I think we have to start the conversation with just how good Sabrina Ionescu was, particularly late in that game. Her ability to get downhill, and this is something that we broadly talked about this year, has broadly improved. So
I've brought it up all the time.
I know. I'm just all out. You know, I'm talking the general skill set, not necessarily Sabrina in this particular game. That's what I meant by broadly. But like, we have broadly discussed Sabrina's growth inside the arc all season long, to Steve's point, and often brought up by Steve himself. But to see her just kind of wreak havoc late in that game, getting that, and even before getting into the paint, just some of the setups were really fun for her. We'll empty aside. Let me string this out. Let me see what you're doing. I can now get downhill and make you make a decision. If extra help comes, I can dish it. If it doesn't, I can now finish at the basket. The Aces just did not have a consistent answer for Sabrina Ionescu. There is already a level of basketball fear with Sabrina. If you give her space, she's willing to shoot. Now that she's gotten as comfortable as she has with not only getting downhill, but playing through contact, initiating contact, and still keeping the head up to be able to make reads if you overcommit somewhere or have a breakdown somewhere, it's just made her so incredibly difficult to deal with. And so, like, the box score speaks for itself. 24 points, 5 assists, also grabbed 9 rebounds. But she was just, she was amazing down the stretch. There's really no other way to put it. Like, the floaters that she was mixing in on some of those wing pick and rolls is incredible to watch. And I think heading into the game 3, I would imagine scouting report starts with, how can we make Sabrina Ionescu uncomfortable? Scheme-wise, what can we tighten up to make sure that some of these reads aren't as available as they have been? What can we mix in? What kind of help presence can we provide to make sure these reads aren't as easy as they were in different pockets of that game too? Because she is, you know, we've talked about like the Liberty MVP candidates this year at different points, like, hey, Jonquil, the way she started, Sabrina Ionescu with her growth, and again, the handle that she's had on the ball figuratively and literally, and her decision-making growing, stuff like that. We know what Breonna Stewart provides on both ends of the floor. But overall, like, she is the head of the snake for New York. And I think if the Aces are to get back in this series, they're going to have to find a way to truly bother her.
Who's the head of the snake?
Go ahead.
Dude, I didn't hear you. My headphones just went out. What'd you say?
I see what we're doing. Sabrina Ionescu. All
right. We'll circle back to that later.
Okay.
I think the thing that Sabrina did a good job of in this game, and it's been an interesting back and forth, is finding ways to turn the corner and finish those drives. And I think what she's done a good job of is work to force the issue, to keep her dribble alive, and to work to turn that corner, but it's not always for a finish. So there are plenty of times where it was hard push, I have room, I could turn this corner, now I can kick it, or now I can get off of it. So now you mix that with fake handoff, turn the corner, finish, pick and roll, I see you're dropping back, finish, get into a pull-up out of it, understanding the gaps and where the attacks can be to hold the defense in a drop and open up a pop. It's the versatility. I think, one, Sabrina being able to have the drives in this particular series is key. Because when the Aces are playing better defense, so Liberty up against the shot clock, that gives them something else they can add and run and put into. You can kind of trust the Sabrina and pick and roll possessions a little bit more. Two, in this particular game, they needed it. Kind of just like in game one when the fourth quarter offense just kind of went away. And Stewie said, actually, no, we're not doing that. Elbow action, cut, layup, you know. She had those big buckets. This was Sabrina's version, which I thought was pretty important for Liberty and Sabrina. I think the interesting part for the Aces in this matchup, because of the lineups, Sabrina has a comfort with the coverages. The one thing that Sabrina has struggled with, and this is especially a salute to the Minnesota Lynx, we're not going to give you a heads up on what the look's going to be. Mm-hmm. It might be a switch. It might be a trap. We might be dropped back. You won't find out till you come off the screen. Mm-hmm. Because of the personnel, and it's not to say I imagine the Aces will throw everything onto the floor in game three.
We're going to see some junk in the words of Becky Hammond, I would imagine.
I think you're going to see some activity. I think you're going to see everything they got in game three. And the Liberty will have to respond. But I think because of the Liberty's ability to move the ball side to side, it hasn't been the easiest to pinpoint exactly one thing. Because we've seen Asia be at the level. We've seen Asia switch. We've seen Asia in a drop. We've seen Sabrina hit a pull-up three on occasion. Seen Sabrina turn the corner. Seen Sabrina hit the pop. Okay. We've seen guard screens. Mm-hmm. We've seen a switch. We've seen Sabrina get off of it. We've seen two Liberty big spaced. We've seen Leone Fiebish and Benaja Laney Hamilton seeing the space and saying, I would like to hit you and post up. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, all right. We feel comfortable with the switch. But wait, we don't want that person guarding Stewie. There's an opening. So I think it kind of ties in, not to take away from what Sabrina did, but can the Aces find that comfort consistency? Because I thought they did a good job defensively. Really worked to pressure the Liberty's offense. Got them to start the offense about 17, 18 on the Clark. Got them to start their offense higher on the floor. Cleaner with some of their switches when they had to be, although they still had issues. But then you look up and you feel that activity and it's still 20 paint points for the Liberty. And that's where you think about the shift lineup-wise. Okay, we're going with Leach Clark. We're going with Smaller. Where is Asia supposed to help from? Mm-hmm. So you have this combination of Liberty drives, Liberty moving the ball side to side, different people as screeners. We're mixing in switches. We're active. But now, if we get beat off the bounce, is our help there? How big is our help? What does it open up if they kick? Are we rotating? Mm-hmm. And so it becomes this battle of sustaining defense on that end, but it's the same battle for Liberty on the other end. You know, I know I'm going off a tangent, but my brain just kind of recollecting things. I thought the Aces did a really good job early of establishing the type of tempo they wanted to play with. We're going to get into what we want to get into earlier. We're going to make you move and make you a decision. Our cutting is going to hurt your rotations. We're going to move Sabrina around. So, hey, cool action. She's actually going to be the low person on the weak side. That's not the help you want. At the nail, that's not the help you want. Involved in actions with Asia to where, hey, yeah, she can do her job, but this is an empty side pick and roll with no nail help. We have an advantage because we cut back door from the wing. I thought Asia Wilson was really, really good for the bulk of this game as far as just punishing Liberty for putting doubles, putting two on the ball. You want to turn the aggression up and just automatically double? Well, actually, I'm just going to pass immediately. Nail it time after time. You're not going to feel comfortable about it. You kind of saw the back and forth there where, okay, well, we'll just double off you once you start getting into your move. Or, you know what? Actually, hey, Stewie, you guard Asia. Jonquil, you guard AC. And now let's do that double. Let's see how you feel about that one. So that yin-yang and back and forth is fun. But it's the Aces getting into drives, getting into kicks, forcing Liberty to rotate. It's whoever can keep that advantage and whoever can make the other team feel uncomfortable with what they're trying to do. So far, it's been the Liberty for the majority of the time. I will say, these fourth quarters, I don't know if you're going to send the Las Vegas Aces home if this is the fourth quarter execution. What, 15 points in game one, or 16 points in game one, 19 points in game two? They're going to have to, especially on the road, be ready to deliver a blow or take a punch. For lack of a better term. On the flip side, they haven't had like a real three-point game. And elimination games can work one of two ways. We've seen, I think, the last 3 years in a row, game three has just belonged to the home team.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I would not be surprised if the Aces just went out there and did Aces things for 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. But hey, you get a 3-point game from the Liberty. Now it's different. Or you get a Liberty foul trouble game. Now it's different. Mm-hmm. Which I will say, and I'm going to pass the ball. Sorry. Okay. I want to salute the Liberty bench. Kayla Thornton and Courtney Vandersloot were very, very key and important for the Liberty in that game too, with their efforts on both ends of the floor. And I think we talked a lot about the impact of the lineup change, the starting lineup change for the Liberty. I think they've gotten really quality bench minutes. I think that's been really important. You got CVS decisive playing downhill. I think one key thing that the Liberty have done a good job of is, okay, you know what? Aces are going to play off Courtney Vandersloot. Courtney Vandersloot is going to be guarded by Kelsey Plum. Sloot, just stand in the corner. If we get this role,
guess who's helping?
That's the rotation we'll live with. I think those bench minutes are important mainly because, yeah, this team is probably designed to try and play better against the Aces, but it's a lot. It's one thing to have different combinations you can put together against this team. It's another thing to be forced into having to play a certain group because someone doesn't have it going or someone is in foul trouble. So you can feel better about playing Stewie at the five because you want to rather than Jonquel Jones has to go to the bench. Now we must play this unit. You can mix in KT and Courtney Vandersloot, but if Leo and Bernijer are in foul trouble, that's a different feel. So that's kind of where my mind goes to game three. Go ahead. I rambled for too long.
No, that's really good stuff. I actually wanted to toss you a question because I had a thing.
What's up?
But you brought up the Liberty's fourth quarters, which very quickly looked it up. A 100 offensive rating in fourth quarter so far through two games for the New York Liberty. The Aces also have the 100 offensive rating. So it's just a dead heat through two games, which is very funny to me. But with the Liberty offense in the fourth, is it just a tempo deal, or is there anything in particular that you've seen from the Aces to kind of force them into not executing the way they...
Aces defending their tails off and Liberty getting tight, if we're being honest.
Okay. Fair enough.
I mean, I have no numbers to support it. This might purely be eye test, but there's at least a 3 to 4 minute stretch in both of these fourth quarters where Liberty stopped doing things offensively. Just jazz music stopped. Aces fighting like hell to come back, but the movement wasn't the same. The tempo wasn't the same. The juice wasn't the same on the actions. The randomness, you know, you ain't seen as many dives. It's kind of, okay, well, what's the next option?
Guess it's just this.
Well, all right. Did we find some? Where's Stewie? Okay. You know, that kind of feel. And you combine that with the Aces, A, defending, and B, oh, we got to go get it. Here's Asia Bop, KP Drive Bop, Jackie, but they've won two, but I don't think they can bring that fourth quarter offense to the table. I ain't gonna hold
you. Okay. I wanted to get your thoughts on that just very quickly. What was it, a 12-point fourth quarter for Asia? That game two, she just said, I've had enough. Here are these mid-range jumpers. Here's a quick drive. A lot of fun on that front. I'm trying to think where I want to start. I have like four different thoughts in my head right now. Like, I appreciate you saluting the second unit. Courtney Vandersloot, the drives, the early and one. Just going reversal over Asia, which was very funny to see. But heck of a shot for her. Her drives were important. The defense from Kayla Thornton, very important. And again, just adds to the overall grip that the Liberty can have on you defensively. Like, they just have size pretty much everywhere. Outside of Sabrina and Courtney Vandersloot. And even when you're trying to go after them, you still have to deal with that kind of length on the back end. And so it was nice to see the offensive production kind of carry on there too. I think, what was it, third quarter, where you get to just a random trap against Chelsea Gray on the baseline with Kayla Thornton involved when the Aces just didn't have anything. It's like the fact that Liberty can just throw that at you is kind of unfair. I just really enjoy watching them swarm around the defensive end.
Well, wait, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but here's the thing, just to add to the Liberty defense point. Their ability to fly around makes it tough because that was a really good stretch, I thought, from the Aces offense to a degree where it's like, hey, we're going to go empty side pick and roll, if I recall correctly. Sabrina, you have fun navigating. Stewie, what do you want to do with it? We turn the corner. Oh, wait, there's help. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, they recovered. Oh, no, they doubled. But that's been the part of the program that's made it interesting, because I think the Aces have worked to find advantages. The Liberty have worked to, okay, we're going to scramble, we're going to recover, we're going to fly around, we're going to figure this out in a way that hasn't felt like the Aces are dictating all of the rotations. Couldn't say that last year. Mm-hmm.
And just to bounce off of that, that was going to lead into like a general Aces point, because you talked a little bit about the double teams and the general help that Asia Wilson has seen in this game too, and just in the series overall. It just doesn't feel like, how do I want to phrase it? Because I don't want to be disrespectful to anyone involved. But like, it doesn't feel like anyone else has made the Liberty care consistently, if that makes sense. Like, Kelsey scored in the game one. Like, did Kelsey bend or break New York's defense?
Bend or break, no. Hurt it, yes. I will say. To that point, I think I said it after game one, when Kelsey started to get downhill, those rotations felt a little different, because we're rotating because we're beat. And now that's opening things up for us. So I think, to your point, it's less, I think they care deeply. I think the thing is, they're comfortable with certain matchups. And that's where the Aces haven't been able to flip it on this Liberty team. Last year, they were not comfortable with several matchups, which resulted in, oh my God, early help. Oh my God, drive and kick.
Kick, yeah.
If we recall, they're comfortable with different combinations, with Sabrina just outright guarding Jackie. That changes things, because now, guess what? We don't have to put two on the ball against Jackie Young. No matter how good she is, we can live with this under. We can live with the isolation possessions and not feeling like we have to double. Jackie got cooking a little bit, and you start to see a little creep over, but we can now mix in the help when we want to, especially depending on who's in the lineup. Because of the rotating factors, too, we can show early help. We can show early help. We know someone else got our back. We can show early help. But that's on the Aces, again, to continue to punish them for showing that help. And okay, cut. Are you sure you guys have the rotations in order? We can get an open shot that way. Thought they did a good job there. They're comfortable with some of the switches, depending on who Stewie's guarding. Okay, we can switch back. Now, again, how many times do you see the Aces kind of, okay, now we're going to go to this action, and then it's, oh yeah, Stewie's now guarding that person, and it's now another switch. Mm-hmm. And now we're kicking out of the matchup, and they're back set. And so I think it's one of those deals where they have to make the Liberty feel that pressure again. Mm-hmm. To where, okay, not that we're going to play someone off the court, but do you want player X to guard player Y? Do you feel great about it? And that combined with some of the, we just making shots, that could flip the game right there. Mm-hmm. If we're being honest.
Yeah. Cause like, wanted to, just to bounce off of that quickly, like talked about after game one, where Chelsea Gray was incredibly quiet. Like, she had those two jumpers in pick and roll with Asia against drop. She was able to get Benaja Laney Hamilton on her hip, kind of flowing to pull ups. And then that was just kind of it. I was like, well, the Aces are going to need more and better from Chelsea. Like, she's going to have to flip this. And then she comes out of the gates in game two and sprinkling in tough shots. It's like, oh, well, if this is the Chelsea Gray the Aces are getting today, this might be split heading into Vegas. So like, they're going to need that element into, you know, the Jackie Young portion of the program. Went 4 of 8 from three. How many of those 3-point attempts were self-created? Like, it's a testament to her talent, because she just got Sabrina leaning on a couple of those, like, between the legs, set up, and then going to the step back, smooth. But like, how many of those specific shots are bending what New York wants to do? And it just feels like the only consistent source of that through two games has been Asia, because of how quickly the Liberty are coming with double teams and showing just an extra crowd whenever Asia touches the ball, which to you, I'm glad you mentioned earlier, but like, Asia's done a really good job passing the ball in the series. But if she's the only person that's bending New York to this degree, then there's even more of a spotlight on the tough shot making. where like last year it felt overwhelming, but ultimately there was a foundation of you don't feel comfortable with Chelsea, you don't feel comfortable with Kelsey, you don't feel comfortable with Jackie, you certainly don't feel comfortable with Asia. If we use them in tandem, y'all gonna break somewhere. And now it's a drive kick fest. And then on top of that, Kelsey can boogie and take a pull-up three. Jackie's more comfortable against unders. Chelsea Gray can just make whatever shot inside the arc she wants to. And we know what Asia can do. And in this series, it's mostly let's not let Asia get comfortable unless she is standing between 15 and 19 feet of the basket, which Asia can obviously win in that area. She's been doing it all year. But even that goes into the how much are we making New York move? How much are we bending them in general?
It speaks to the personnel change as well, because you would probably go with, okay, Alicia Clark's the screener now. Well, if Phoebus is guarding and it's been Aja pressuring Chelsea, that's just a switch for the Liberty this year. Mm-hmm. So it kind of hits your pressure points in a different way, to where I think they found success, again, putting Sabrina in different scenarios, but you can't manipulate everything. But again, if Sabrina's not only going to feel comfortable in the Jackie matchup, if they can also just be like, all right, that's fine, Sabrina, switch on to Kelsey. Mm-hmm. They're much closer to the will live territory than you would want if you're the Las Vegas Aces.
Yeah.
Now again, that can flip. Mm-hmm. If you've seen when the Aces start humming, the black jersey started to get a little antsier with the help. Mm-hmm. A little antsier. But I think that's part of what you're saying. I think a lot of that comes to being able to generate tempo. And again, this is a team that would like to defeat you. So last year where AC could get a switch and it's a post up, well, actually denial, you know, those type of beats happen a lot more this time.
Mm-hmm. And so I think quickly bounce off of the you can't manipulate everything portion. I agree. Like, I know you're right on that front. I will say if there's a thing that the Aces probably should be more intentional about manipulating in game three, and just, you know, especially if they're able to extend just throughout the rest of the series, I think if they want to generate paint touches, like, they have to be more intentional about locating Breanna Stewart and moving her around a little bit. Whether that's let's stash you in the strong, whoever she's defending in the strong side corner, so we can work to the opposite side. Hey, let's just engage you in action and then try to work it elsewhere. There were just so many possessions in that game too, where Stewie is one pass away from whatever the Aces were trying to run. Like on some of those empty side pick and rolls that they were spamming. You just got Stewie at the above, you know, just at the arc, just right there, can provide a presence at the nail. And again, like the Aces, especially at their best, like these are players that can operate in tight quarters. So it's not like they should be like quote unquote scared of Stewie. But I do think if they want to get closer to generating more of those pockets where the Liberty help seems a little bit more tentative and things like that, they're going to have to move Stewie a little bit more. I think she's had way too much of an impact from like an Aces perspective on some of the drives that they're trying to get to, some of the roles that they're trying to open up. Like Stewie, she's too disruptive. She's too good.
I think to counter that, I think what makes it tricky, one, Stewie is a tremendous help defender. Two, she's been willing to help off whoever's on the perimeter because she knows she has backup and rotations. Mm-hmm. Three, I think the most success they've had as far as getting Stewie out the way is either when Stewie's at the five and has to be in action, or when Stewie's having to guard a pick and roll with Sabrina. That's probably been the most it's felt like they can kind of push things in a different direction, because that's not an automatic switch.
Yeah.
So now y'all have to give us a different coverage. But it's hard to do because, again, Stewie is also switching off ball. So it's not like she's only guarding, you know, AC. Mm-hmm. She switches. Now she switches back on ball. You go away from it. She switches back to, you know, AC, who's now spaced somewhere else. You know, you have to watch their weak side rotations. Because it's not like
they're doing a good job.
They're fluid. So it's hard, again, to just, okay, we got Stewie here. It's going to be cool. All right, actually, Sabrina, will you take them take the nail? I'll get it down here. You know, they just move. They move.
Yeah. That's the beauty of this Liberty defense, man. Also, can I toss you just a quick free throw?
What's up?
Are the Liberty just better?
better prepared, better equipped, I should say.
Okay.
Because someone will say better prepared and take it a different way, and that's not what I meant at all. Better equipped for this matchup in the sense that we feel comfortable being able to make it hard on you in certain ways, feel comfortable with our help points. We feel confident of what we have to do offensively, moving the ball and attacking and being able to space the floor and put you in predicaments where your help is smaller than you want it to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, the roster moves were for this. You know, if you look at last year's Liberty team, probably a lot better offensively.
Mm-hmm.
But a team that, okay, how many people can guard the Aces folks? Benaja, KT,
Leone, Stewie.
Oh, no, I was talking about last year.
Oh, for last year. Okay. Well, it was Benaja, Stewie. Well,
you see what I'm saying?
I know I'm forgetting somebody, obvious.
But that was the idea. Hey, let's be able to do this and not have to worry about that. And now we can kind of win some of these closer games. And it's not like the Aces didn't battle. And I expect them to defend their tails off in game three. And if the drives are off the table for Liberty, I think it's a whole different game. Mm-hmm. Whole different game.
Keep an eye on the drives for sure. But man, I'm so impressed by this Liberty group. I know I've said this a few times on the pod at this point, but like, this is just what it can look like when you have that kind of size, that kind of versatility. And then now, obviously, you can add in the narrative factors on top of that, like they're super motivated for this matchup, want to avenge last year's loss, et cetera. So they have just done a really good job of making life difficult for the Aces on both ends of the floor. Not that it can't be countered. That's what the games are played for. Again, I'm going to be in Vegas for the weekend to see these games or game. We'll see what happens. But the Liberty have done a really good job of setting the tone. And I think zooming out a little bit on this game, too, briefly tap into like the narrative bag. Like the fact that they were able to hold on and make big plays and ultimately win that game, too. I think it's huge for the psyche. Like the Aces pushed in game one, they were still able to get it done. Game two, they legitimately just could have lost this basketball game. And for them to still get big stops, get big plays from Sabrina, from Stewie in particular. Again, we've talked about some of the struggles that Stewie has had against the Aces over the past couple of years. And even in this game too, like wasn't the most efficient outing for her. But be able to make those plays late, like it's just a loud example of this being different from last year. When talking about this Liberty team. So I did want to salute them on that front. Flipping back to the Aces side very quickly, offensively. You already talked about them putting Sabrina in more actions. Going with some of those handoffs to Asia inside the arc. Or just some of the double screens to set up a handoff and getting Sabrina involved. And Sabrina very quickly saying, hey, I'm not switching on to this. Absolutely not. Get me out of here. I do wonder if they tap more into the off-ball bag for Asia. Honestly, as I just think about the offense and the usage for Asia in this game, I mean, the series, it's very much a size thing, but the inverted actions just have not hit the same in this series. And I think there's just a very basic, well, yeah, Jonquel is huge. We're not going to be able to, as great of a screener as Kelsey Plum is, yeah, it's a little different trying to screen. It's different trying to screen like Ezzy, who is an elite defender. One of the best defenders in the league, but it's just like generally thinner, or a screen NECA versus screening Jonquel Jones. And so if Jonquel can stay more attached, the opening that we're used to getting here isn't there. And now we got to search, or Asia just has to create against a more set defense. And she's Asia Wilson, so she can still score. But like, and I guess zooming out, think about the series, like the margins just haven't been there for the Aces. Like there's a standard that their stars have to hit to be able to win. But like, they're not creating the same edges. They don't have the same space. They don't have the same leeway. And so I'm just generally curious on how they find that in game three. Because to your point, like this could just be Chelsea hits four threes, Kelsey hits five threes, Jackie hits two threes, Leisha Clark hits two threes, Kia Stokes hits a quarter three early in the first quarter to cap a run. Asia boogies, Aces win by 18. Very much on the table. But just broader strokes or just tapping into the process brain, like, where are the edges and can they hit them consistently? Like that's just kind of where I'm at with this Aces group. Because again, there's just a foundation of size, length, versatility that the Liberty have that makes it really difficult for them to find the same cracks. And the Aces are just going to, they just have their work cut out for them to try to find those advantages and swing things back in their favor. Did you have any more comments or questions or general thoughts from this game too?
I think part of it is the Liberty haven't had to deal with all three of those guards humming in the same game. Two, Asia's stretching that fourth, a lot of quick decisions on the perimeter before y'all can even think about helping. So on those pin downs, it's been hard to catch a rhythm because Jonquil's got the unders going. The drives have been contested, no fouls. You drive and spin, there's help coming. So there's not been one thing. You know, they've kind of tried to work different things in. But I think it's a talent game. Again, the Aces have the talent to take whatever you're trying to do and throw it over the top rope. Now, if they do that, do you think you'll try something else? Because again, the Liberty did say, you know what, Asia, not you today. And she's like, fine, I'll pass. And it worked. So, you know, can you put them back in that land? It feels very do better button, but force the issue. Drive, play with tempo, ball movement, player movement, get to the free throw line, get them in foul trouble, different game, different series.
All right. Good stuff. Well, very quickly note, we're about to talk about the Link Sun game next. I do have award news that just came through the email. I guess looking now, came in about 20 minutes ago. So we'll get that after we talk about Link Sun. But we do have award news to discuss on the W side after the season.
What's the award news? Are you going to tease the award news? Just do the breaking news. Absolutely.
See, this is why I'm not Steve. But Indiana Fever's Caitlin Clark has won the Rookie of the Year award. Received 66 of the 67 votes for
Rookie
of the
Year. I'm sure this will be handled responsibly.
The one vote naturally going to Angel Reese, who had a historical rookie campaign in her own right. But Caitlin is your Rookie of the Year, 66 of the 67 votes, and the all rookie team is also out. It is Caitlin Clark, it is Angel Reese, it is Rakia Jackson, Camilla Cardoso, and Leone Fevish. The voters did it. Leone Fevish is on the all rookie team. So there's your five.
Well, here's what I'll say.
Okay.
Congratulations, Caitlin Clark, on an incredible year. We saw the growth. We've talked about it on this pod before, so I'm not shortchanging, but we saw how good she got and how important that was for Indiana. And then she did it with like very minimal rests. The drives, pick and roll, the passing. It was very, very good stuff. Very quickly, you want the list of WNBA Rookie of the Year winners to also finish top five in MVP voting?
Sure.
Tamika Catchings, Candace Parker, Diana Taurasi, Elena Deladon, and now Caitlin Clark.
That is a ridiculous five. Ridiculous five. Obviously, Candace Parker winning Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same season, but... Good gracious.
Now, if I can raise my hand here real quick.
Okay.
Just celebrate the Rookie of the Year. Please tell me there's not going to be any discourse.
Steve.
You know what? I'm going to pivot to a free throw.
Okay.
Who we find out first? Who voted Caitlin Clark second, or who voted Asia Wilson fourth for MVP?
Oh, the former in three. I think we get that before we get the Asian one. There's a part of this where it's like, if we were going to learn the fourth place voter, we would have it by now since we're a year out. But no, like that's again, like, yeah, because we just did do the MVP rant, huh? Because Angel did land on the MVP ballot for someone, and she got a fourth place vote. And so I would imagine that the person that gave her that vote would be the same person that gave her the Rookie of the Year vote. It'd just be very hard for me to believe that those people that would just be different ballots, because like, how would one be the, you know what I mean? Well, I guess there's a world like Caitlin gets third on the ballot, Angel fourth. So it's in a literal sense. Yeah. So I'll take some volume off of that one, but yeah, that's why I made the tweet. when the MVP stuff came out, I was like, hey, just let you know, if Angel ends up on the MVP ballot, there's a pretty high chance that Rookie of the Year is not going to be unanimous. But again, like 66 of 67 is good enough. Like, I don't think it shouldn't be a big deal to your point. So like, even if you disagree with the point, even if you disagree with that vote, like that one in particular shouldn't be as big of a deal as it could be. As I've said, there have certainly been worse votes cast this award season, but.
Hey, not too much. You already were told.
That's true. That's pretty true. But I still don't get that one, but salute. Hashtag salute. There you go. All rookie team is out. Rookie of the year is out. And so now we're just waiting for six player of the year? Is that the only one left?
Well, I think that's it.
Oh, I guess while we're here, shout out to De'Erica Hamby for winning the Sportsmanship Award. As that was announced, I want to say yes, again, recording on a Thursday. I think that was released yesterday. So I forgot to get that in the notes portion earlier. The news portion earlier. So salute to De'Erica Hamby on a tremendous season. Clearly the on and off court impact was there as well. So I want to give her a salute. I think we're just waiting on sixth player of the year. So I guess we'll see if we get some weekend news. Yeah, Leonie Feavish certainly has to be a sixth player of the year front runner, if not the winner. Tiffany Hayes also had a tremendous season. So like maybe if it is Hayes, like maybe they were just waiting for the series to get back to Vegas before she gets that award. So we'll see. Like, I don't have any insight on that. I'm just literally live rambling on thoughts on that front. So I guess we'll see, but I think that's it. Well, that's it for the individual awards. We don't have the all. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. So yeah, I think that's it. I was like, wait, did we get all W? But yes, we sure did. That is that on that. We can now transition back to playoff talk. As the Liberty have a 2-0 series lead, we got a tied series in the real Hoop Bowl between the Minnesota Lynx and the Connecticut Sun. The Lynx with a 77-70 victory in game two. So again, series tied at one game apiece as the series shifts to Connecticut on Friday. And let me just say, the first quarter of that basketball game was both, it was real hoop. It was also funny. It was also a little bit confusing considering some of the drives that happened in that first quarter where the whistles were just in row G, I guess. It was very much a let them play start to this basketball game. So I just had a good time with that one. But broader strokes, great response by the Minnesota Lynx. I would say in the second half in particular, their offense looked more like the offense we were accustomed to. Like, I felt like their tempo was so much better in the second half than it was in the first half. I think the drives really started to hit with them. They just in general were able to move the ball side to side. Caleb McBride hit a lot of big shots, hit some big shots in the second half. Courtney Williams really turned up in this basketball game. So we were briefly alluding to her a little bit earlier with some of the award stuff. Watching Minnesota, like watching them try to set up some of these post touches was interesting to me. Like, it wasn't the greatest fee game. Naturally a testament to defense that Connecticut was playing, but it did feel like they were starting to get to a little bit better in the second half, even though those shots didn't fall. Like, it just felt like the overall flow with their offense was better. And defensively, I've just really enjoyed the way, in both of these games, but especially loud in this game too, as they got the win, I really enjoyed watching Minnesota just extend their defense. Like, on one hand, it is just the general pickup points with some of the stuff and forcing Connecticut to play a little bit deeper in the clock. And as Steve, you've said, like, Connecticut, there is a level of comfort that Connecticut has working deep in the clock. But you could tell there was a little bit more intention from Minnesota to really dictate turns on that front. And then just their coverages and ball screens in general. It was a point that you made earlier with Sabrina. But, like, you never really got a feel for what they were trying to do in a good way. This may be a late switch. We're at the level here. We may just turn this into a trap and keep two on the ball. We may get out. Nafisa Collier in particular, more so off the ball than on the ball. Just watching her pretty much have her fingertips on just about every defensive possession for Minnesota in that second half. It was kind of like Spider-Man meme for me watching Alyssa Thomas on one end roaming off a fee and just trust that she can recover out if they kick it to her. And then on the other end, Nafisa Collier is just all over the court, helping on drives and try to set up posters and come with a double if necessary, just generally contesting things at the rim. it was fun just watching those two roam around. But like, I really appreciated Fee's defense in this game overall. And it was a good dub for Minnesota. One they certainly needed, because going down 2-0, then hitting the road would have been disastrous for them. But offense felt better late in that game. Defense was good overall, I felt. Just quality stuff from Minnesota, in my opinion. What were some of your broader takeaways from this one?
Well, I think one of the things to build on what you said, Minnesota, the pickup point is really impactful in this particular series, because Connecticut will move the ball, can move the ball. Tempo is always a question mark. And so if we are now, A, forcing you deeper into a start, and B, making y'all specifically start higher on the court, we now can set and feel comfortable with what we're doing. We don't have to rotate, but we can kind of dictate a little bit more. I think their comfort level with switching Bridget Carlton onto Alyssa Thomas makes a lot of this work, because now Marina Mabry, okay, I'm working with Bree Jones. It's two on the ball, but Alana Smith isn't going anywhere, and there's still help elsewhere. Okay, I'm working with Alyssa Thomas. Nafisa Collier has now jumped me. There's not really anywhere to go. And, you know, it's not necessarily specific there, but now, okay, I work with Dawana. That's a switch. The lanes weren't where they needed to be. So that first quarter, if you just enjoyed defense and attempts, was fun. I thought Minnesota had that. They had the drives were impactful for them. I'll put it that way. I don't think the bot score is going to be as kind to Caleb McBride and Courtney Williams as their impact felt. Whereas, okay, we're rejecting, we're driving with purpose. We're going to get downhill. We have more of a purpose to drive to score, or drive to attack and drive to get you to commit. And now we play out of it, as opposed to just the flow and just the tempo. But I mean, this is what these two teams bring out of each other. You know, it's, you know, if you watched before, this is what Sun Mystics used to be. Like, we're going to defend, you're going to defend, one of us is going to figure it out, and the other one's going to try and reply back. But I think the issue for Connecticut is they just never really felt like they had that rhythm offensively. They couldn't necessarily find the gaps. They didn't have the shots going. So now it becomes, okay, can we continue to generate offense against this team? I thought that was an important win for Minnesota. One, I mean, obviously they needed to even the series, but two, we kind of need to win a gross one. Mm-hmm. Even though they shot 45%, we kind of need to get in the mud and roll around a little bit. I'll ask you the Steve special. Who feels better going into game three? Connecticut having done their job and, you know, still being relatively in a game where they didn't necessarily have their best? Or Minnesota for evening the series and being able to win one when, hey, and if he's collared, didn't necessarily shoot well. And it's not like we were tremendous offensively.
Yeah. I think my initial thought is Connecticut. Like, there is just a basic level of, hey, we stole home court. We handled our business, dot, dot, dot. So there's that element. Beyond that, and maybe this is just me being Alyssa Thomas peeled, like, the fact that you are getting this level of defense from her and also getting the aggressive offensive version of her, to your switch point, like, there, I think there were pockets where they could have gotten the ball to Alyssa Thomas earlier, if at all, when facing some of those switches. But, like, I feel like there's room for upside offensively for Connecticut. Like, if you're getting this version of AT, like, that adds an extra level of juice. You know Marina will shoot, and they have moved her all around the chessboard through these first two games. And something that I hammered or talked about in game one that stood out again in game two, it has been very quiet for Bree Jones through two games. But, like, similar to the Aces point, like, that could flip pretty quickly. I think Alana Smith has had herself a tremendous defensive series, a tremendous defensive year overall. But, like, in general, like, there is an element of size that Bree Jones has over Alana Smith that you get back home, you establish Bree Jones early. Would you be surprised by an 8.4 rebound first quarter for Bree Jones in game three? I wouldn't. Again, she has to do that. But I think if you're Connecticut, we've defended well. We've kept this high-powered offense down, much like we did during our regular season meetings. We've gotten a more aggressive version from our star. And we are notched this up without Dawana hasn't shot well yet. We haven't gotten much of anything from Bree Jones offensively yet. If one or both of those things flip, what does this look like for Minnesota? Not necessarily it's impossible for them, but, like, if I'm Connecticut, I feel pretty good. Like, man, we stole game one. And We're in a fine spot in game two. Minnesota, again, outplayed them in the second half. But we're in a fine spot in game two. Worked our way back in that fourth quarter. Ultimately, couldn't get it done. I think this series has been more in the mud than I think Minnesota would like for it to be. So I would lean Connecticut on that front.
Interesting. I respect it. To the Bree Jones point, I think there's an opportunity to try and use some of these screen rescreens if they're going under to Connecticut's advantage and Bree Jones' advantage.
Yeah, because one of her early buckets.
Yeah, I think they came out of a timeout. Bridget either slid under or went over. They went to a quick rescreen, got a roll for Bree Jones. But it just doesn't feel like they've hit that button enough. Like, get some low angle pick and roll, do something at the end of the clock. Because I think what you're missing with Bree Jones not playing at that same level is the dynamic portion of the offense. Like, one thing that Alana Smith's done a really good job of is actually, you know, I know you're spacing this short corner. I'm not going to let you hit me early. So now your timing is off on that seal you usually get. And now you're going to get back to that short corner and I can help. So now that puts them in a tricky spot. I think the more they can kind of add that in, so, okay, we can kind of lean on this a little bit. We can have some of these possessions where we have something else other than dribble handoff under. Did Dejanay drive? Did Marina or DeJuana Bonner make a shot? You know, where it just kind of felt programmed at times. Not because Connecticut wasn't trying to move the ball. It's just that's all Minnesota was giving up for portions of that game.
No, I think that's actually very quickly on the Connecticut offense front. One thing that I've sneakily enjoyed through the first two games, like I really enjoyed like the random cut slash flashes slash seals from the corner that we've gotten from Dejanay, like DeJuana tried going as well. Like I do, to your point, like I do think there's a little bit more randomness that could be sprinkled in just to open some things up in the half court for Connecticut. Because again, like you know, there's going to be a lot of handoff stuff and a lot of hub work for Alyssa Thomas. You know what coverages you would like to think you know what coverages you're getting. Like there are some of these players are just going to get unders. And to your point, like there are going to be the rescreens from there and stuff like that. But if you can inject more of that randomness, and again, like if you're able to get Bree Jones more of those touches, like on the roll, if you're getting the rescreens, or if you're able to find more creative ways to get her post touches. Like, I think there's another world for Connecticut to operate in offensively. And again, zooming out, like, I wonder how Minnesota works to counter that.
Yeah, you got to credit Minnesota's defense, though. I mean, part of it was just you're searching for something else. We are working like heck to take it away. Like Dejanay Carrington drives, there are three black jerseys that are in this.
Nah.
Like, okay, because of the way you have to drive, are you over penetrating? Do you have an outlet to pass to? Do you still have any flow? Veronica Burton, do you want to drive? Well, we're going to keep that reject in front. And then if you do have space, we're fine with switching some of these matchups. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think Connecticut just has to make quicker decisions and play with a little bit more tempo to get through multiple options in a way that's just not as slow as it was in this game.
That's fair. Can I toss you a half-court offense free throw?
Sure.
Through two games, who do you feel better about against switches, Connecticut or Minnesota?
I guess I go Minnesota.
Okay.
They've had the rejects and they've had Nafisa Collier. I mean, they're both hurting each other's feelings, if we're being honest. So we're both making it not fun for each other. Mm-hmm. I think that the timing and ability to mix the switches in is probably a little bit more impactful for the Minnesota defense, mm-hmm. as far as when and how they can do it. Because here's the, like, which switches for Connecticut do you feel have just really thrown Minnesota out of whack? Do you think it's sustainable?
I lean, yeah. Like, my initial thought would have been just like the Courtney Williams fee setup. But, like, even with that, like, that's what made the Atlanta Smith buckets feel so heavy in game two and early. Cause, like, they were very much treating Atlanta Smith like a help point. And Atlanta being able to burn them with a couple of threes in that game, like, I think that's helpful. Is that enough to shift Connecticut's strategy? I don't know. But at the very least, Connecticut has shown we are comfortable. We will switch this and then we will show help from this particular area. And so there's at least that kind of baked in. Yeah, like I guess, again, zooming out, that's why Atlanta was like one of the X factors I had in mind heading into the series. Okay, you're going to have to hold up against Bree Jones, and offensively, you're going to have to knock down these shots. She hit the shots in game two. And also, just, what was it, 3 offensive rebounds for her in the first quarter of game two, where both teams were quite literally looking for offense in that opening quarter. It was an 0-for-14 combined start from the field. But like her being able to slip in, like it was also just funny to me generally, because I've talked about Minnesota's rebounding all year long. And then Atlanta Smith comes in with those. And it just felt like overall, the offensive rebounds really hit Connecticut in this game too. I don't know how sustainable that portion of it is, because like even some of the early ones Atlanta got is, we're not boxing out. I am just running from the 3-point line untouched, grabbing a board. And Alyssa Thomas looking around like, what the heck is going on here? Which very quickly to that point, like I knew this game was going to be funny by the first possession. Like I was able to catch some of it live at, you know, on the Tuesday. I was doing like post-game Aces things, et cetera, et cetera. And so turn back to the score is what now? That graphic says what now, et cetera. So like getting to watch the game in full yesterday. First possession of the basketball game, the Minnesota Lynx run Spain. And God bless Desjardins, who's obviously a tremendous defender. But Desjardins gets lost in the possession. Not going to belabor the point, but gets lost in the possession. And like being able to hear Alyssa Thomas say, what are you doing with the arms outstretched? As Fee flashes, gets a mid-range jumper, she misses it. I was like, oh, nah, AT wants this one. Also, this is very funny. Kinetics have to lock in a little bit because this may not be very fun for them on the court or on the sidelines if things are not tightened up. But no, like this was, I still generally just trust Connecticut's defense. And I think the switching has flattened out Minnesota for a little bit. The rejects and the drives are interesting, because if that part gets sustainable, I wonder what Connecticut does on that front. Like, do we see more drop from them just to add that extra layer of protection? And do you open up more of the 3-point volume in game 3 and beyond if that ends up being the case? It still hasn't felt like the same volume of Minnesota runs thing, defense helps, here's wide open catch and shoot opportunity. That's a testament to Connecticut's defense, but like Minnesota hasn't tapped that button consistently through the first 2 games of this one. And so to the switches and the drives and the rejects to that degree, like what is the threshold for Connecticut on that front? And does that open things up for Minnesota? Because if it does, like Minnesota does just have a higher offensive ceiling than the Sun do. And so it's very important for Connecticut to kind of keep them within this box that they've had them in generally through the first 2 games. So this could be more of their game. This could be more of their arena. They just kind of lean on some of their late shot making from there.
I think Connecticut's got to, they've got to keep the ball in front. They can't give the possessions where Minnesota's able to get in the paint. And now those rotations don't feel the same where they're getting layups. Mm-hmm. It's actually funny because that second quarter, I thought Connecticut generated some really good shots with just AT at the 5. I think that's part of the benefit of Ty Harris being able to come back to where Alana Smith, you now have to help and recover back to Alyssa Thomas rolling. And now weak side, you got to hold for a second. But I think the Sun have to do a better job of containing the basketball, because they did a good job with, I think, a lot of the Lynx movement. It's just, they got the topper. We have this mismatch. We've got this help point. You had to rotate here. We turn the corner. Yeah, take that off the table. Keep them in the mud. Mm-hmm.
I guess simply going back to the Ty Harris point. Like, one, very nice to see Ty Harris back on the basketball court. Also nice to see Xander Lissini back from Minnesota as well. So the answer to that free throw was just yes. We love that. What is Connecticut's best lineup right now? Because actually they start with Bree. We've seen the Veronica Burton stretch, particularly in game 1. Olivia Nelson-Adota gave them good minutes in game 2.
What's their best hypothetical lineup or the...
Well, I mean, the hypothetical answer is Bree Jones.
I would say Bree. I would say Bree, or you go AT at the 5 with Dawana, Desjardins, Ty Harris, Marina Mabry.
Okay. So that was it.
Oh, that was it?
Oh, no. That's like, because I'm trying to like gauge that. Because again, obviously, if everyone's firing on all cylinders, like Bree Jones is the slam dunk answer to this. Because of what she can do on the block, sprinkle in the mid-range jumpers, crush on the offensive glass, more size defensively. They've had her at the level, so that's just a whole lot of size for Courtney Williams to see over if you're trying to run a pick and roll that way, et cetera. But like, as she has not played that well, and now at this point just hasn't played all that often, it's like, okay, what are these alternative lineups going to look like and who gets the nod? Because like Ty Harris, to your point, like she just got back. So I am curious to see like what, like how quickly Stephanie White ramps her up in terms of the minutes. Because she was just starting for them. So like, as we head to game three, we had a two-day break. Do we see Ty Harris back in the starting lineup? Marina comes off the bench now. Do you keep that static and you just keep Ty Harris minutes down a little bit? Like I genuinely don't know.
I would imagine there's still a ramp up, especially the way Marina's playing, but you never know. They might say, you know what? We need that scoring off the bench. Real quick, salute to Maisha Hines-Allen.
Yes.
Because as I mentioned, the Connecticut small lineup, Maisha Hines-Allen in the second quarter was like, actually, is that a switch? Is that Veronica Burton? I would like to access the paint very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Bop, bop.
I'm going to drive. Chippy game. But these two teams are getting after it, and I enjoy every single second of it. Compete your way to the finals. Not, no surprise if you watch these two teams play.
Bro.
Push off, handoff, fall, Marina holding Dejanay back. Welcome to 2024.
Hey, man. We be respectfully messy for like 1 to 2 business minutes.
Sure.
Is there a player in the league that the Minnesota Lynx are or have been more fed up with than Marina Mabry?
Probably you could pick another Connecticut Sun.
Well, because good gracious.
No, the answer is Sophie.
Ah, well. Hashtag well. But no, to that point, though, Marina and Courtney Williams, Marina and Nafisa Collier, Marina and Kayla McBride. It was just a whole lot of antics. Competitive antics, not problematic at all, but just antics. You know what I mean? Like, it adds some flavor to the postseason series that it was already going to be nasty because these are the two best defenses in basketball. But now you're adding all of this on top of it. And it is incredibly funny. Have you seen some of the, like the steel shot photos from that game too?
Yes.
Because, yes, buddy. Yes, that, yeah, it's just been one of those. And now the series is shifting to Connecticut. To which, again, this is not me implying anything or inferring anything or anything of the sort. Just a question in my head, just to throw that clarity out there. I do generally wonder just like how well the Minnesota Lynx fans are going to travel on this one. And within that lens, like what the home court advantage is going to be like. Does that ramp up the hashtag antics in this game three and or game? Well, I guess game three and game four. Series tied, so we're getting those two. Really curious to see what this atmosphere is going to be like. Because I also feel like, you know, the first round was different for obvious reasons in terms of like crowd split in the first round for Connecticut. I would imagine this was going to be a little different. And so like, what does that mean? How does that impact things? Does that 8-0 run feel a little heavier because of what the crowd split is in games three and game four? So there's some little game within the game stuff that I am monitoring as the series shifts over. But I'm glad you brought the Maisha Hines-Allen portion of the program. Like her ability, she's just a versatile offensive piece, and the pure strength that she has just causes problems if you're trying to switch. Like, oh, well, I don't really want my guard to deal with all of this. We have to send help, or this is just a foul or a bucket or both. So that gets to be a bit problematic. And also, I'm still trying to figure out how the heck she made that shot at the end of the second quarter to put Minnesota up 6 entering the half. It's like, what is this? Which also just, you know, brief joys that I was brought in that basketball game. Maisha Hines-Allen does that at the end of the second quarter, and then Alyssa Thomas follows that up in the next quarter. It's like, what is this? This is fun basketball being played right here. Shout out to, we mentioned it a little bit earlier, but shout out to like the personal 9-0 run for Courtney Williams. Or she scored like 9 straight points for Minnesota, rather, to be more accurate. Nice to see the pull-up going for on that front. Shout out to Atlanta Smith. Talked about Fee's defense. Oh, this has just been fun. Again, very basic points. I won't hang here too long. But naturally, Connecticut needs a better version of Bree Jones as the series shifts to Connecticut. The shot making for DeWanna Bonner. It would be nice to see that perk up for Connecticut. And again, that kind of ties into the overall upside portion for Connecticut, to where one or both of those players get going, like this could just feel different, but you want to see it. Oh, I guess also just adding to the fed up factor in this game. DeWanna Bonner very fed up with the officiating, particularly in that first quarter. If there was some drive, she took some bumps, and the refs were like, hey, that's nice. Congrats. And speaking of congrats, I think DeWanna Bonner now third all-time in playoff scoring. So certainly want to give the salute there. And I want to say there was another milestone in terms of postseason games played. So I'll try to locate that by the end of the pod. I don't want to mess that one up. But this has been a record-setting season for DeWanna Bonner. Don't want that to get lost. But no, this has been some really fun basketball. If you enjoy defense, this is the series for you. Also, LOL at the steal that DeJounay Carrington tried to get late in that fourth quarter.
She just got one. Off the,
that's true.
Guys, how do you feel about the entry passing in this game?
Oh, it freaking... the entry passing was not very good. No, we were in the watch party for a minute. But no, it was not great. Watching Fee get... You know, switch on to Fee, favorable positioning, hand is up here, the ball goes elsewhere. To your point about DeJounay getting a steal before going for that gamble, they were just trying to set up a touch at like kind of more so at the wing than the elbow. Just trying to set up a touch, and DeJounay is able to steal the pass from, I think, Caleb McBride, because it's just, I'm staring this down. Here's this one hand pass with little velocity. And DeJounay is like, well, fine, I'll just time this, deflect it, and get out of here. And there were just a lot of turnovers that was just the result of bad entry pass that my player can't catch, or that my player was not in position to get because the ball went way higher than it was supposed to. And to my, like, I wrote a piece for Bleacher Report, bold predictions. One of my bold predictions for this series was that neither team would crack 80 points. I think that would just been blown out of the water in game two if entry passing existed. However, that was not the case. So we are still live through two games. We will see if that holds. Any closing thoughts, questions, or anything concerning this series or this game?
You sneak a plug in?
Yes. Aha.
Yeah, hey, go check out that article where, never mind, I ain't gonna do it on the pod.
Oh, man.
That's some heavy praise for Sabrina that I ain't never heard on these airwaves. I'll tell you that much.
That's... I just got yelled at when I sprinkled that praise into the most improved conversation. That's all that is.
Think about that. Think about, you just did it right there for me. Think about that. Got yelled at because I talked about the most improved. That's all, it's fine. It's all right. It's all right.
Tisk, tisk. But any closing thoughts, sir? Or shout outs or questions or anything you're looking forward to heading into the game 3 and game 4?
I mean, this is a difficult series to kind of pinpoint one specific thing. Because, I mean, the Lynx played better. Did the Lynx figure something out? I mean, 17 assists once again. So they're still having to work for this. 15 turnovers. So the center is still very active. Is this just now the Lynx have a 3-point shooting game? Is this just going to be the terms of the series? Does DeWanna Bonner having a better game change things? Does Marina change things? This just feels very back and forth. But I think if Bree Jones can have a better game, that changes things for the Sun. I think if the Lynx guards can continue to play at this level, that changes things for the Lynx.
Okay. Seems pretty straightforward. I'm just ready to absorb a lot of this. Like, I'm trying to pull the curtain back a little bit because, again, I'm going to be in Vegas for those two games. On Friday, the Sun game's coming first. So I'm trying to gauge like how much of that game I'm going to get to watch live versus like watching it on like either later Friday night or on Saturday morning, as I'll have to do like pregame stuff. But I'm just excited to dig into this one.
Did you do another self promo?
It's not a self promo. I'm being vulnerable. I'm trying to lock the people into the basketball schedule here.
That's not vulnerable. Hey, yeah, for the eighth time I'll be in Vegas. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to watch that game, but you know,
that is not the tone. I want to enjoy basketball with all of my pals. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm just like, hey, I don't know if I'm going to catch it live or most of it live or like a portion of it live. And then you know, I gotta watch on set.
I got to be asking them questions in person, big dog. You know what I'm saying?
See, this is... Dagnabbit. Thanks for listening. I'm the Kaius. He's Steve. I see what we're doing here. Have mercy. Okay, well, there's nothing else there. We'll see. Philander hits more threes. See if he perks up. Offensively, there was just some monies that she missed, but ultimately, I'm really enjoying the post battles with her and Alyssa Thomas and just the general help battle between those two. So that part's going to be fun. I think it'll do it for me. I just want to see more of the series. I'll do it. Any closing basketball thoughts before we head out?
Are you ready for Ben Simmons' portion of the preseason?
Yes. Unironically, yes. I will be the Ben Simmons believer on the podcast.
Are you ready for insert team is trying to shoot more threes talk?
Only if that team is the Denver Nuggets.
I got a free throw for you. Which one do you believe more? As I'm reading right now. Cleveland wants to shoot more threes or Miami wants to shoot more threes?
Which one do I believe more?
Yep.
Believe more probably Cleveland just because of being Kenny Atkinson. Not that Spo is opposed to threes for very obvious reasons, but yeah. I guess for me, like the Miami portion would be like, I feel like the three conversation is kind of pointed towards their best two players. ... And I don't actually know what the diet is or what the appetite is for Spo in terms of like Bam threes and or Jimmy threes. He certainly doesn't want it to be zero, but like, I don't know. Yeah, I just don't know what the threshold actually is. But Kenny Atkins, I think it's just general philosophy things. So I probably lean the Cleveland portion.
Okay. I respect it. Hey, Nikias.
What's up?
Did everyone forget that Chris Finch used to coach Julius Randle?
I guess so. Seems to be news for a lot of people.
Yeah. Oh, last one. Hey, are the Bucks overlooked?
Well, probably, but that's likely because they overlook each other in terms of off-season workouts. So, I mean...
Oh, God. Can I be respectfully messy real quick?
You sure can.
How you going to feel when you there's a group of people that go on an awards rant that sound like yours, but it's for a different reason?
Just to paint the picture here, Steve is leaned back all the way in the chair laughing. Because he knows this is going to get me. Will not be pleased. Not be pleased. You'll get more detail on what this is in reference to on later episodes of the Tucker Spot podcast. But fun year ahead, Steve. Fun year ahead. Speaking of which, hey, if y'all want NBA content for us, tap in next week. Continuing our W playoff coverage, but it is hashtag time, brother. We got what preseason hoop this weekend? Question mark. It's coming soon.
I'm pretty sure preseason starts Friday.
Hey man, it is it's time.
Hit the horns, man.
All right. Well, I guess it is also time for that. So thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google. Well, not Google, RIP Google. Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter if you haven't already. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties, hoop, wrestling, gaming. We laughing, we talking real life stuff, we ranting, we venting, we doing all kinds of things. If you want to rock with some cool people, link is in the description. Free to create your profile, no shenanigans. Come rock with us, come have some fun with us. Beyond that, we will catch y'all next week.
Hey, Nikai, it's a good show. Glad to hear you are all about the learning tree.